Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving, Living and Thriving, Living and Thriving with Rusty. Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. It's Living and Thriving time, and guess what? I'm Rusty, and I'm so excited about being here, even though I'm completely beat. I'm tired. Tired with a capital T and a capital D. Tired. It is gorgeous here in sunny Florida. I woke up to 68-degree weather, clear skies. Now they're a little cloudy. And that's okay because it's just beautiful. I love living in paradise and feel blessed every day that I get to wake up to this beauty. I can't even tell you how wonderful it has been. I have to also remind you that you are loved and you are beautiful and you're amazing. And I host this show to inspire you to be inspired. And I really am looking forward to my guest today, Rocco. He's a fella. He's just one of those fellas that you want to go and have cappuccino with and shoot the shit with, because he's really, really that guy that everybody wants to be friends with. He's going to talk about leadership, and leadership is a huge feather in my cap. I believe very strongly that we need more leaders in this world, that we need leaders who are willing to be responsible for their leadership and continuously educate themselves so that they can inspire other people to be inspirational and do good on this planet. And Rocco's that guy. He's going to help us tighten our lug nuts. Yep, that's what I said, tighten the lug nuts. If you want to call in and ask Rocco any questions, the number here is 929-477-1165. Little personal adventure I'm going on tomorrow. I have not been to Busch Gardens since 1980-something. I didn't say that out loud. I was 8 years old, I think. And we're going to go tomorrow, and that's going to be a hoot. It's going to be a hoot nanny. It's been a million years, and I can't wait to see all the changes and the difference and just to have a good time with my best friend and all the kids. It's just going to be nice. I need it. I've been working my tail feathers off all season, and season's winding down to an end, and unfortunately my landlord wants to rent or sell her house, and so now we have to move, and I hate moving with a passion. So, you know, good things come, doors shut, doors open. I got this. I always do. I just don't want to move. I hate packing. Lord, do I hate packing. I find things that I forgot I had 6 months ago, you know, but I should think of it more like Christmas. Yeah, that's it. Christmas. Rocco, I know you're out there.
Hey, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Hey, how are you? Yeah, I can.
Very good. Well, it's my pleasure to be on the show with you.
Yeah, I'm excited about today's show. It's we haven't talked about leadership in a few years, and I think it's just something that we should revisit, because sometimes I think people feel a little deflated. And right now, with the way the economy is going and the way all the messaging that we've been getting, that hasn't been very optimistic. And I think you're the right guy to kind of, you know, light a little fire under our bums.
Well, thank you for saying that. And I think you're right. Leadership is something that we all have concerns about, and all of us are leaders at one time or another. So it's a great conversation to have.
All right. So tell us who you are, what you do, and what inspires you to be you.
Well, thank you very much. So Rocky Romanella, as you have said, over 40 years of business experience. I spent 36 years at UPS, started out as a part-timer unloading trailers in Edison, New Jersey. And I worked my way through college, and UPS had a wonderful promotion from within policy that I took advantage of. So I had an opportunity to do many things inside UPS. You were talking about moving and the fact that you have to move. We moved 9 times across the country. And with four kids in tow. So if Debbie was here right now, she'd be having an interesting conversation with you about all those moves. But it all came about because when I went and got the job at UPS, and I was telling my dad, who has since passed, about the job, he told me two things that stuck with me throughout my career. And the first thing was, whatever they ask you to do, say yes and thank you, and then learn your job and learn some more. And so there were times along the way that I may not have felt ready, or I may have been, you know, maybe my confidence level wasn't there, but it was interesting. People believed in me until I was ready to believe in myself, you know? So I realized that that was one of the key attributes of excellent leaders, is you have to believe in your people until they're ready to believe in themselves. And then once they get to that point where they have the confidence and they have the experience, then I think you step back and you don't need to overmanage them. You just need to let them go, you know, be that cheerleader, be there for them, but let them run. So that was a great learning experience for me.
So I too worked at UPS. I did not have the glorious position of waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning to start loading trucks by four, but I worked for one of the retail stores for about 2 years. And I just admire the strengths and hard work and dedication that the guys have, because boy, whew, those can be some really long days, especially around Christmas.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So what were you doing when you were working for UPS?
I worked at one of the retail stores, so I did the shipping,
okay,
the boxing, you know, all that stuff.
Oh.
Good times.
Well,
yeah.
You were an important part of the team. You put the shipments together.
Right. I had to make sure that we had damage control. That was me.
A lot of that going around, right?
Exactly right. Tell us a little bit about what inspired you to write your book. Or book, plural,
well,
I should say.
Well, for me, it's about this concept of legacy. Do you leave things a little better than you found them? Are people better because of their time with you? Are your customers better because of their interaction with your company? And so for me, I thought about legacy, and I thought about, you know, A, do you leave things a little better? And B, can you leave things a little bit better? And I thought the book was a good way for me to talk about some of the things that I along the way, things I learned along the way, the wonderful people that inspired me, helped me throughout my career, and hopefully some of the things I did to help other people along the way. And I thought that was a great way to leave a little bit of a legacy. And so I started writing a book. And of course, as you know, when you're sitting there at a blank sheet of paper, you're wondering, is anybody going to read this book? And do I have enough to write a book about, right? And so I started to write, and I started to put together the many stories and the many, you know, wonderful things that happened along the way, and began to create chapters that were like lessons a lot. And then built a story with the fictional character I named Joe Scafone. And Joe Scafone, the reason for Joe Scafone is throughout my career, whenever someone would bring me an idea or bring me a thought, and I wanted to challenge them not to stop at the first right answer and maybe look past that first right answer, but I didn't want them to feel like I didn't like the answer, or that I was shutting off conversation, or I didn't want to hear what they had to say. And so for me, I created this character, Joe Scafone, and I would say to you, hey, Rusty, that's a great idea, but you think Joe Scafone thinks that's a good idea? And you would laugh, and we kind of laugh at each other. And that was my way of challenging you. In fact, as time went on, people who knew me would come to a meeting and say, hey, I already covered this with Joe Scafone. He thinks it's a great idea. Okay, that's good. Let's listen to it first. So it was just a way for me to not talk in the first person, not say, well, I think you should do this. It was a way for me to challenge you to maybe look past that first right answer, not stop at the first right answer in a positive way. So Joe Scafone's been with me through most of my career. And so he became that, you know, he became that main character in the book, Tighten the Lug Nuts.
Give us an idea of what Tighten the Lug Nuts is all about. Give us, you know, a summary.
Yeah, well, it's about leadership. And for me, leadership, we're all leaders at one time or another. Leadership, you know, it's just not reserved for someone with a title. I think the problem we get into is we believe that, you know, let's say my title is CEO or manager or supervisor, that means I'm a leader. No, we're all.
Hello? Hello?
Oh, parents. And so for me, I think that leadership is.
Rocco, honey?
Yes.
I missed.
Yes.
For some reason, you went dead for a couple of seconds. So if you can rewind a little bit, that would be great.
Okay. There's a background. There's the background of our conversation for a few minutes. So I don't know if that's me on my
end. Yeah, that's weird.
Do you hear that?
Do you want to hang up and call back?
Yeah, if that's okay with you, sure.
Yeah, that's
great.
Try
it. I'll try it.
I would rather have
okay.
everybody
okay.
hear you rather than, yeah.
Okay.
All right, cool.
I'll do that right now. Bye.
All right. So Rocco's going to hang up and call back, and hopefully we have a little bit better audio with him, because he's got a lot to share, and I think he's going to really help you execute your daily goals and monthly goals and yearly goals. Leadership is very important, and to really focus and delve down into what you want, what you need, and how to be successful in whatever it is that you do. I think it's just truly, truly the way you become successful, and stepping back and taking those steps to better yourself. And, you know, having a right-left perspective, you have to be able to balance your perspectives. So Rocco will be calling in just a minute. And while he's doing that, I'm going to find who we have on next week. Doo-doo. And if you have any questions, definitely feel free to call in at 929-477-1165. Rocco's website, absolutely must see, is the number 3, and it's 60managementservices.com. So it's number 3, SIXTYMANAGEMENT services.com. And check him out. He's a great speaker. And he definitely helps you explore your process and tighten up those lug nuts. I love that analogy. So let's see who's coming on next week. I am booked for the entire year, so it looks like I'm going to be doing some pre-recorded episodes to throw up at various times. So be on the lookout for that. Make sure that you hit that follow button here on blogtalk.com. And this way, we can be on the same page. I love that. Lola Scarborough is going to be coming on next week. We're going to talk about life. She's like this crazy cool character. Not on yet? All right. Let's see. She owns a yoga studio. She's an alternative health advocate, social entrepreneur. Boy, my tongue is new today. And she survived breast cancer. So, you know, she has this whole book called Fighting for Our Tits. Yeah, love it. I have a lot of friends that have had breast cancer and have had removals and replacements and so forth. And it's a journey. So it's kind of cool that we're going to be talking to Lola about life and the beautiness of life. Rocco, my friend, I missed you. You were gone for so long.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear
Hello.
You now. All right.
Oh, there you go.
Yay, high five.
Sounds perfect. You sound perfect.
Yep, and you don't sound like you're in a fishbowl, so we're doing really well. So let's rewind a little bit and give us the synopsis of your book.
So the book was, as I was saying, the book was written with this concept of legacy in mind. And for me, legacy is this thought of, do you leave things a little better than you found them? Are people better because of their time with you? And so for me, as I was thinking about writing a book and, you know, maybe taking some of the lessons I learned along the way, the wonderful people that influenced me, I thought, well, what a nice way to do it if I could write it in a book in a story fashion, have some stories in there that people can laugh about, but also some lessons in there that people can maybe create a few aha moments. Oh, that's a good way of looking at it. Maybe I should look at it differently. Maybe that's a thing that could help me. And so as I wrote the book, I wrote it in this third person under the character named Joe Scafone. And Joe Scafone was this character who I created many, many years ago when people would bring me an idea. And instead of saying, well, I think you should look at it differently, or maybe this is a different way for you to look at it. For me, Joe Scafone, I was able to say, hey, you think Joe thinks that's a good idea, or maybe you can look at it differently. And so it was just a way for me to challenge you to not stop at that first right answer and maybe just kind of move past that first right answer. And so it was a positive way of challenging you without, you know, making you feel like I didn't think it was a good idea or maybe you should look at it differently. So in a negative way. So Joe Scafone became my main character, and I kind of put together all of the many lessons I learned, the places we lived. As I was saying before, we moved across the country, starting in New Jersey, all across the country. And so some of those journeys, some of those lessons, the wonderful people we met along the way are all part of the book. And each chapter stands alone as a lesson, both in business and in life, but also comes together in a narrative, in a fun narrative. So I think you'll enjoy the book. The title comes from actually one of the chapters. So you got to read the book, but it's actually a story that took place in during one of my walking around and one of my work routines when I was living in Southern California, and it becomes one of the stories in the book, and it turned out to be the title of the book as well.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I really like the tightening up the lug nuts, because no matter what industry you're in, what capacity you're in that industry, you can always do some tightening, you know, and whether it's going to be your career, because you know the way the world is, the IBM generation's gone. You don't live and die at one company anymore. You have 8 or 9 careers in your lifespan. And so each and every role that you take, even as a parent or as an uncle or as a teacher, whatever your role is in life, I think tightening up and becoming a better leader is hugely important. And a lot of that has to do with education. Where did you find the most valuable resources?
Well, you know, I think it's the people you work with and the people you interact with. I mean, I think if you're open to learning and you're open to listening, I think that, you know, you learn so much from the people around you. And then, you know, I enjoy reading the different books and listening to some of the different thought processes and the way people approach things. To me, that was always interesting to see, you know, how you would approach this subject or this task versus, you know, how I would do it. So I always thought that was important. But I think that you learn so much from the people you engage with, the people you work with, the people that you have experiences with. You know, it's funny, you talk about leadership and you mentioned teachers. You know, one of the examples I use all the time is that, you know, if we were in a large conference room or conference and I was the keynote speaker and I was saying to the group, hey, let me ask you a question. Who's your state senator or who's maybe your head of your board of ed? Most people couldn't answer that question. But if I ask the question, who's the teacher that made a difference in your life? Everybody stops, tilts their head. Ah, Miss So-and-so, fifth grade. Mr. So-and-so, sixth grade. Everybody has that teacher who's made a huge difference in their life. And by that extension, they've left a legacy. They've left things a little better than they found them. And so they're leaders by that extension. Although many teachers would tell you, oh, I'm not a leader, I'm a teacher. You know, I don't really have people reporting to me or working for me. Well, you're a leader as an individual contributor because you make a difference and you've impacted so many people's lives. And so I think that's the quality of leadership, I think, that sometimes people miss. And we talk a lot about that in the book. And then the second quick point is on the title, Tighten the Lug Nuts. You know, one of the things that we talk about is you'll see in the story that as I'm walking to talk to a supervisor, I noticed that one of the vehicles has loose lug nuts. Well, it's not unusual with road vibrations and those kinds of things. And so as I'm approaching the supervisor to give him this task I need him to do, and I'm going to motivate him that he's the best person for the job, and I'm all excited that he can do it, I say to him, hey, by the way, you got that package car over there, it's got some loose lug nuts. And he kind of smiles and says, all right, I got it, and then proceeds to excitedly say to me, well, what is it that you would need me to do? I'm your guy. I can get this done for you. Okay, great. And then a few days later, I go looking for him, and he's beside himself. He's overwhelmed. I said, what's the matter? He goes, I just got a call. That vehicle, there's a vehicle that has a front tire. The driver thinks it's loose. I said, well, isn't that the one I told you about? And he says, well, yeah. I go, why don't you just tighten the lug nuts? And so the lesson there is that when you allow important things to become urgent, you get overwhelmed. When the lug nuts were loose, they were important. When you didn't tighten them, they became urgent, and now you got overwhelmed. And how many times do people allow important things to become urgent to where they get overwhelmed, and now they just can't handle, you know, what life is handing them or the things that are going on around them, and they're looking at you like it's your fault. Well, wait a second. Just tighten the lug nuts. So don't allow important things to become urgent because you can only handle so many urgent things.
And I think that's beautiful. We are a very fast-food society, and I talk about it quite extensively throughout many of my shows. It's a huge irritant that we do not slow down, and we miss so much, and we're teaching our children to be fast food, crazy, speedy, and there's not enough slowing down. And I think if you were to slow down and pay attention to your lug nuts, tightening them anymore, it's just maintaining them, right?
Oh, yeah, and it's understanding. You know, it's understanding what's going on around you. And I think the other problem with, you know, being in such a hurry or trying to get to that next point, or as you were saying, you forget to say thank you, and you forget to recognize those people around you or who are helping to make that success inside your organization or inside your team or inside whatever group you're working with, right? Because you're so focused on the next point, the next place you're going to, as you said, you know, going from point A to point B, the fast food generation. Well, there's still no substitute for a simple act of kindness. There's still no substitute for, hey, great job yesterday, thanks, or thanks what you've done on behalf of our customers. We miss that. You know, we send texts instead. Well, you know, there's no substitute for that personal touch of, you know, it drives me crazy when someone will say, oh, I got a raise. You know, my boss texted me and I got a raise. I'm thinking, how could your boss text you about a raise? That's such a missed opportunity to say thank you. Such a missed opportunity to say, hey, thanks for a job well done. Appreciate all you do on behalf of our organization. Instead, we're going to text it to them. I mean, how? To me, that's where we're missing the golden opportunity to to engage with our people, engage with your friends, engage with neighbors and your family members, and have those simple conversations where you can have, you know, thank them and talk to them as a human being, not just as, oh, okay, let me text Rusty and make sure she knows. Hey, her raise was X, and thanks a lot. It should be in your check in 2 weeks. I mean, really? That's what we're down to now? That's, to me, I just think those are missed opportunities.
It's concerning, especially as a parent. I have a 13-year-old, and she knows better. She knows that every day we're going to sit and have a conversation. Every day, you know, eye contact, that sort of thing, because it just doesn't fly in my house. But in the normal world, I drive down the road and I see everybody stuck to their cell phone. And people get hit by cars because they're not paying attention. Cars are running off the road because they're on their phone. They're not engaging in a human capacity. They're Autobots. And there's a lot of missed opportunities for human time. And I just don't know where we've veered off the road there. It's quite frightening.
Well, I think, you know, one of the principles, you know, I think that you always have to kind of keep in the forefront and make and guard against it is this concept of don't allow your strength to become your weakness. And you see it all the time in management or in leadership, right? Where, you know, my strength, for example, Rocky Road, my strength is I'm high energy, I'm energetic, I get to the spot quickly. And so what's my weakness? I'm high energy, I'm energetic, I get to the spot quickly. I get to the spot too quick, I don't allow you to kind of talk to me about it. So your strength becomes your weakness. Well, if you think about it, cell phones and technology, well, certainly is a strength, but we've allowed it to become a weakness in that we don't engage with one-on-one conversation. We really don't know how to have difficult conversations with people because we don't have many conversations, and certainly the difficult ones we shy away from. So I think you have to, and to your point, you know, you have those conversations with your daughter. Well, you recognize that if you don't have those conversations will go away. And so you're helping her to be able to have those conversations. But that's because you recognize that the strength of technology could also be the weakness. The strength of that phone will be the weakness if we're not careful.
Exactly right. Now, this is the time and place where you get to plug yourself. You tell us who you are, what you do, and where we can find more information about you.
Well, okay, well, Rocky Romanella. And so I'm the founder and CEO of a company I started called 360 Management Services. And we have three legs of our stool. One leg is keynote speaking, which I predominantly do. I have a keynote speech coming up in Naples, Florida, as a matter of fact. It's a logistics conference. And I'm another one coming up in Denver, and then another one coming up again in Phoenix. And so I enjoy the keynote speaking. I went to college originally to be a high school history teacher and a baseball coach. So I've never given up the passion for teaching and educating.
Right.
And so for me, it's just a different classroom. It's a business classroom. So keynote speaking and leadership training are two legs of our stool, and it gives me a chance to really kind of live that passion. And then we have we do process improvement and consulting, those kinds of things. And so that's our company, 360 Management Services. You can find us on the web at www.360managementservices.com. Very interactive website. I answer all the, you know, the questions or contacts personally. My email is Rocky, R-O-C-K-Y, Romanella, R-O-M-A-N-E-L-L-A, @gmail.com. The book can be found on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. It's been very humbling. We're a 5-star Amazon book, so I really enjoy that. I do a lot of book signing, and then people email me, hey, can I buy a book and can you sign it? And the answer is always, of course, yes. So I really enjoy that as well. So that's where you can find us. So as I said before, a 36-year career at UPS, then I had a 3-year career as a CEO and of a telecom company. We built cell towers, upgraded cell towers, those kinds of things. And then we had a sale there, and then I started this company. So I guess you could say the thing I failed the most at is retirement. So it's one of those. I think the first day I retired, I looked at my wife, Debbie, after, you know, 36 years of moving around the country. I looked at her and said, what are we doing today, hon? She goes, I don't know what you're doing. You haven't been around for 36 years, but you're not following me around ShopRite, that's for sure. So I said, okay, well, let me start doing something here.
She put you in your book, sister.
Yeah. well, that's right. Well, I tell people all the time, you know, it's funny. The book is full of lessons, many of which from my dad, who was such a huge influence in my life growing up. But I would think the most profound lesson that I received is from my wife, Deb. And if you have a moment, I'll share it with you. But just
a
fantastic lesson. So we go out to dinner one night, and we have four children. Now we have five grandchildren. We just had our fifth grandchild, but we have four children. And so we're out with this couple who we just kind of recently met, and we were talking, and the woman says to Debbie, hey, who's your favorite child? So Debbie looks at her and says, no, I don't have a favorite. They're all my favorite. And I'm thinking, I got to listen to hear how she answers. It's the first time I heard anybody ever ask her that. So she said, no, they're all my favorite. The woman says, come on, one of them has to be your favorite. Is it Jean Marie, Nicole? Maybe it's the boys, Rocky and Andrew. And she says, no. They're all my favorite. So the woman says, well, how could that be? She goes, because each of them gets what they need when they need it. Now, think about that. And I thought to myself, how thoughtful, what a brilliant statement, right? So each of them gets what they need when they need it. And so when I'm talking to them or with them, they're getting what they need, which then they feel like they're the favorite because they're getting what they need when they need it. And from that moment forward, I've managed all my operations that way. And I thought about, you know, if you have a staff and you have a business development director who may be brand new, well, what they need is your time, your energy, you know, coaching, counseling. But if you have a CFO who's seasoned, they don't need you overmanaging them. So what they need is support and their authority that goes with their responsibility, their ability to get their job done without you overmanaging them. But a new member of your staff maybe need more of your time. So from that moment forward, and it just was such an impactful, you know, statement you made. Each of them gets what they need when they need them, when they need it. And from that moment forward, that's how I managed all my businesses and all my relationships. Each person gets what they need when they need it. So for me, that was one of the greatest lessons that I received, and I learned it. You know, I got it from my wife, and I thought, wow, what a thoughtful, what a profound, what a great thought that was.
So hopefully your wife listens to the show, because you just informed us that she's one of your inspirations.
Oh, absolutely.
That's beautiful.
I wouldn't be here without her. I would just, Rocky Romanello wouldn't be Rocky Romanello without Debbie Romanello.
High five. Good job. All right. We are going to have to twist a little bit because we're running out of time. And time is something that is so difficult to put a noose on, isn't it? I remember being a kid, laying in the park or laying in the driveway or wherever, you know, I grew up in Southern Florida. And I just wanted school to start so bad. It was so boring. Oh my God, it's so boring. This sucks. And then school starts and I want summer to come because school sucks. It's so boring. Hurry up, hurry up, hurry up. And it just seemed to be matrix slow. And once I hit 35, I feel like I'm on this Japanese speed train.
Oh, right.
I just
want
to slow it down. It's crazy to me. So as a leader or an individual who is profoundly knowledgeable in leadership, what do you tell people about time?
I think the first thing you have to really understand, and you have to separate out what's need to do, nice to do. And the problem is sometimes we do the nice to do things, which then doesn't allow us to get to the need to do things, which we need to do. And so I think if you kind of understand what's the nice to do and need to do things, that's so important. And it really helps you with your time management. And it also helps you with the work-life balance, because a lot of times we'll do something at work, or we'll go to an after-work activity maybe that's nice to do, but it's not need to do. And maybe by you being at that nice to do thing, while it's nice to do, you may have sacrificed time with your family or time, with their children. And so I think you really have to understand what are the nice to do things and what are the need to do things, and make sure that you have a good, clear understanding of those two things.
What would you recommend a daily routine be for someone who's recovering from their past selves and exploring and growing into a leadership role?
I think organization is so important. So for me, while I think it's good to have a routine because it keeps you sort of on plan and sort of on task, my feeling was always I wanted it to be about 70 to 80% plan. That was really about it, right? So I wanted to have those key things I wanted to do. But I always wanted to leave myself enough time so that if something, if a person came in to talk to me and it was important for them to talk to me, that I had enough time that I could have that conversation with them. And so in retirement, I try to do that same thing, right? I'm getting ready for a keynote speech, but I still want to be able to have the time to where if Deb needs something or we're heading out to help her mom, or my mother, that we have the time to do those things. Or, hey, Deb, you want to go grab a Starbucks? So my feeling is always don't overplan yourself or don't have such strict structure in your life or in your routine that you don't have the opportunity to have that serendipity moment where, oh, this is great. I could have a cup of coffee with someone who I haven't seen in a while because they gave me a call. So I think that's important.
And I agree. I think that we've become too much of a desk society, and I mean desk loosely, because some people don't actually have a desk, but work. And we work, go home, do chores, rinse and repeat. And we have very little time for anything other than that. And it's frustrating to watch, because I think so many relationships, and as you say, missed opportunities happen because we are in such a hurry to rinse and repeat a very ungrowing part of ourselves. If you take the step outside, if you take a day off, if you go and explore a different city you've never been to, just little things, I think that really enhances your compassion, your empathy, and your objectivity on life as a whole. And those components help you become better in your workplace and in your work efforts and your motivation, I think.
Oh, I think you're right. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why the book is titled Balanced Leadership as well. And it talks about this concept of balanced leadership. And I think the problem is when you get too focused on one thing, it's like you look at kids today in sports and, where you are there in South Florida, I mean, baseball is just a huge sport there. And you have kids that play baseball year round, when we were kids, you played baseball, you played basketball, you played football, maybe you played hockey, but you were more of a well-rounded athlete versus, I'm going to baseball practice, I'm getting my private lessons and so on and so forth. And what happens is you just lose that balance and you lose sight of being a good athlete versus being a good baseball player. And I think that same thing happens. How many people will be exhausted at the end of the day and you wonder, did you really accomplish anything, though? You're tired. You did a lot of stuff, but did you accomplish anything? And that's a big difference between activity and results.
Yeah, so expand on activity versus results. I love, love, love this part.
Well, because if you think, we do a lot of activities. I remember like in a salesperson, how many signed contracts did you get? Or, how many of these and how many of those and how many of these? These are activities. And so, how many cold calls did you do? And so people like stack up all these activities, but they haven't had a sale yet. Well, okay, but you've got me so focused on activities and I'm doing those activities, but they don't necessarily equal results. And so I think that you have to have the balance of saying, well, these are good activities, but there's no substitute for taking those activities, having a good plan, having a good strategy when you go visit that customer and closing the deal, for example, versus, okay, you asked us to get contracts and the standard was 25 for the week and I got 40. Okay, you got 40 contracts signed, but not one person shipping a package. Well, that's a problem, So I think that people sometimes get themselves like caught up in all these activities that they check the boxes on, but they don't equal the results that people need. And I got to tell you, it's not only hollow for the company, but it's hollow for the person, because ultimately you're getting you're being held accountable for sales and revenue in this example. Well, and you didn't get those numbers, so you did all that work, you're exhausted from all the cold calls you did, or you know, all the knocking on doors you did, but nobody's saying thanks, good job, because you didn't get the sale. So I think that you really have to have that balance of understanding what are the right activities, you know, how am I going to get the right results, and so I can achieve, I can feel good about myself, and the people around me can feel good about me as well.
I was an account sales exec for a really long time, many, many moons, and I found it to be a very toxic environment because of that very reason. You would make your $1.5 million in sales. I was high-end technology. And the next month they'd say, oh, well, you did $1.5 million. This month you have to do $3.5 million. I barely made the $1.5 million. And it just, there was never any, I really felt like no matter how hard you tried, it didn't matter. They wanted twice as much the next time. So it was almost like, why bother trying to reach those goals anymore? It was very defeatist.
Well, yeah, and like you said, I mean, then you're doing these activities, and then you're not necessarily getting the results, and so you know, you don't really feel good about yourself. You know, you think about a student, and that's, you know, think about someone who's always studying. No, it's funny, Debbie and I love watching Jeopardy, and you know, great program. You know, if I get 5 or 6 answers right, I'm all excited about it, right, for the night, right? But how about, you know, like you know, the category will be some category, you know, like, you know, early European history, and you know, you got people buzzing in telling you, you know, who's the third sister of the queen in 1675, right? And you're like, how do they know these things? And then one of the questions could be, you know, what sport is it that uses a round ball and a bat? And nobody buzzes in because, you know, nobody knows what this is. It's like, you guys have any idea what goes on in the world here? Do you have any kind of like feel for what happens every day? It's great that you're geniuses, but you realize, like, you know, like regular stuff. And so you wonder sometimes, you know, are you so focused on having so much knowledge that you're really not quite sure what to do with the knowledge? So I think that extreme always hurts. And so that's why I always say, don't allow, you know, don't be focused on activities, focus on results. And then what are the activities that get you those results that you can feel good about yourself?
Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. You have about 10 minutes left to the show, so I want to give you an opportunity to tell us what it is that you really want us to hear. What is your foundational message?
I believe that leadership is such an important thing, as I said before, and I believe that we're all leaders. And I think it starts with being a good person. And I think that, you know, values and ethics are so important. And I think people should ask themselves 3 questions as they're in their career, the same way companies should ask themselves these 3 questions. And the first question is, who am I? And then the second question is, what do I stand for? And I think that most of us could answer those 2, and companies certainly could answer those things, those 2, you know, they have, you know, value statements, mission statements all over the place, hung all over. But the third question is the key question, what won't I compromise? And if you think about leaders who get themselves in trouble or companies that get themselves in trouble, 1 and 2 they can answer, who are we, what do we stand for? But the third one is the one that always gets people in trouble, and is, what are the things that we won't compromise? And I think that's so important because it's about who you are as a person. It's about the values and ethics that you have, the way you treat people with dignity and respect. And so I think that it really comes down to your ability to answer those 3 questions about you. Who am I? What do I stand for? And what won't I compromise? And I think that's so important.
I think that's hugely important to get good with who you are, to be really, really good with who you are. And, you know, we never know. I always talk about how we're farmers planting seeds everywhere we go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's hugely important to get so good with yourself that when you plant those seeds, those individuals are also able to be really good with themselves. And, you know, leadership isn't about being a megalomaniac. It isn't about control. It isn't about being better than somebody else or more knowledgeable or any of that egocentric stuff. Leadership really is about focus, being good with yourself, motivation, and determination, and compassion. So in that, I find, ooh, sorry about that. My alarm's going off. People that really confuse the difference between leadership and megalomania. And you, I'm sure you know where I'm going with this. How do you advise or guide individuals to let go of that ego part so that they can genuinely be a leader and not a dictator? Because it does happen.
Well, I absolutely. And I think it starts with the understanding that it's not about you. It's about your people. It's never about you as the individual. It's about your people. It's about your organization. And it's about the things that you do to help them feel good about themselves and be, you know, be better people and accomplish things so that they can, you know, true empowerment when people discipline themselves, when they feel like they're part of something special, that they understand that they're not the problem, they're part of the solution. And as a leader, I think way too many leaders believe it's about them. I mean, how many times have we worked for somebody who will sit in a meeting and say to you, you don't know what it's like to be me. You don't understand how tough I got. And you're looking at them like, first of all, you got a pretty good job. You're getting paid a lot more money than I am, and you wanted that job. So don't complain to me about this. And so, but they'll say that all the time. And so I think the first thing you got to do is, hey, it's not about you as the leader. It's not about me as the leader. It's about us as an organization. And then if I do those right things, if I understand that, the rest takes care of itself. And I used to tell people when I was the CEO at Unitech that CEO stood for Chief Enthusiasm Officer. If I'm the only person that could manage this organization, or if I'm the person that has all the right answers, this is a bad place for us to be, because collectively it's the best ideas we get. And so I think that that's the first mistake leaders make, I believe, is that they believe it's about themselves. It's never about you as the leader. You know, the brand is, you know, when we moved around the country, you know, people, we'd go to some dinner or something, Debbie, because Debbie has got a very great personality, very friendly. She goes, oh, we got another party to go to. All right, fine. We go to the party, and someone would say, hey, how'd you get here? And, hey, I got moved by my company. Who do you work for? And I would say, I work for UPS. And then the next thing happens that made me so proud, they say to me, hey, do you know my driver? And so if you think about it, that's the strength of an organization, is not the CEO or the leader, managers. It's that frontline person who's interacting with your customers. That's the brand. And so to the degree to which you take care of them, to the degree to which you make them understand how important they are, that's your brand, and that's the brand promise, and that's what's going to make you a great company.
I love how you said that, and I'm so glad you said that, because I work on and off in an industry, restaurant, hotel, hospitality. And what is considered leadership in that industry is actually quite like a virus because it's more, they put you down and they patronize you and they embarrass you in front of your customers and things like that. And it's not just one particular restaurant. It's very many restaurants, very different. It's just part of something that's happening in the hotel hospitality industry that needs to be adjusted. And I cringe often when I see young kids come in, because it's generally the first job to bus tables, to do dishwashing, you know, and they have this environment in which there's this level of toxicity, which sets them up in expectation that that's the way work is. And it's depressing on some levels to see individuals in leadership roles not be able to exhibit true leadership. And I wonder, from your perspective, how you would guide these young people in a way that isn't offensive to the management leadership role people, and yet they are able to understand that that's really not how most companies work. Does that make sense? I'm trying to be very careful on how I word this.
No, I understand exactly what you mean. I think, you know, it's funny. I'll ask people the question, you know, how do you how do you motivate people? And the first thing they'll say to you is, oh, you know, you treat people the way you want to be treated. Well, that's true morally and ethically, but that's not true when it comes to motivating. What motivates people, certainly if you treat people with dignity and respect and treat them the way you want to be treated. But when it comes to motivation, you treat people the way they want to be treated, right? So if you're an individual that understands numbers, well, then when I'm talking to you about sports and you're not a sports person, I've lost you from a motivational point of view. So it's getting to know your people from their perspective. And I think that's a sometimes, you know, leaders believe that, well, they don't have to take the time to learn their people. Well, that's the opposite. You should take the time to learn your people, right? Because part of what you do as a leader, a successful leader, is to understand your people and put them in a position to be successful. Once they're successful, then they feel good about themselves. Then it just becomes momentum at that point. So I think that as a young person starting, you know, starting a new job and you're trying to learn your boss and they're trying to learn you, I think you have to be a little bit user friendly so that, you know, because most of you know, a lot of times you work for people that, you know, can't get over themselves. So you got to allow them a little bit of time to get over themselves a little bit. But they need to understand that from your perspective that you're open. You know, you're open to learning, you're a good listener, you're easy to work with. And as time goes on, they get to understand that, you know, you really are a special person inside this organization. So you begin to get, you know, unfortunately, you would think the leader should be the one that starts the two-way street, but it doesn't always work that way. So if you're working for someone that's not giving you that two-way street, maybe a way for you to begin that two-way street process is by the way you conduct yourself. And sadly, you have to be the adult in the room, even though you're probably, you know, you're the newest person maybe in a team. But that being user-friendly makes it sometimes easier to connect and begin that relationship.
I love it. High five, big hug, squeezes to you. Your father was absolutely 100% and 50 million percent right that when you are in a position, any position, whether you like it or not, always find gratitude for at least having that position. And I think in some ways we've lost that in many of our day-to-day moments, finding gratitude. And I don't know how you personally would emphasize how important that is in your day-to-day.
Well, you know, it starts with, you know, you set the tone from the top. And I think that what happens is if you're that type of individual that recognizes good behaviors or recognizes good work or good leadership or good individual contributions, you really have to go out of your way when people are learning you as the leader to say, hey, this is what good looks like. This is what we recognize as, you know, exceptional work, exceptional talent, because people aren't used to that. So what happens is I think you set the tone from the top as the leader. And I think that sometimes we miss that opportunity as leaders, though, you know, so it's getting out of your office and walking around and recognizing people, saying hello. You know, before, you know, as I was growing and taking on additional responsibility, and you, as you know, UPS, such a large organization, and some of my responsibilities, you know, I had, you know, 70, 80 facilities inside of a region, or, you know, 20, 30 inside of a UPS district. And so one of the first things I did when I got there is I said, hey, look, I like to have a book with the pictures of all the people in each of the buildings and a little bit about them. So if I was going to visit a facility when I was in Iowa, Cedar Rapids, I'd open the book. And as I was driving out there with somebody, they would be driving and I'd be going through the book. And so when I saw you for the first time, you'd say, hi, Rocky, I'm Rusty. Hey, Rusty, nice to meet you. Hey, it's really interesting. I was reading that, you know, you've been here 12 years. Congratulations. That's such a great milestone. I appreciate what you've done. You went to the University of Iowa. And just those little tidbits of information that you know about people. Now, they know that you can't remember everything, but I would always try to, before I went and visit a facility, try to have a little bit of homework on them. So if I saw, or I might say, hey, I just saw it was your birthday 2 weeks ago. Hey, happy birthday. Hope you had a great day. It's those little things that go such a long way that you put the time and effort to get to know them. And you know, now 20, you know, 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, you may not remember those little details, but that moment in time means so much to them. And I think as the leader, you have to make that effort to get to know your people.
Well, and it's rapport building. You're building a relationship with somebody who is a facet of the bigger machine. And when you don't treat people humanistically, you lose, as you call it, you missed opportunities. You miss a lot of opportunities to enhance that machine. And one thing that I've found as a manager is sometimes people are really, really, really gifted in one area, but they're put in the wrong job. And if you don't get to know that person, you can't adjust their sales so that they can shine, you know? And the human perspective is so, so underrated nowadays.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think there's two key points there. The first one was what you just stated, that, you know, they may be very talented here, but, you know, they may be struggling in this current position to put them in. And I think the second thing is that we sometimes want more for people than they want for themselves. And so that's a very dangerous path they're going down, because you could have a really good UPS driver, a really good, you know, person that's doing a great job, and then you kind of convince them, well, take that next level or take on additional responsibility or maybe go into another area. They don't want to let you down, but they're not really comfortable. They don't really understand why it's a good thing for them, whatever the reasons are, and now they fail at that job. Well, not only do you have a person that's now not feeling good about themselves, many times they'll end up quitting. And so now you've lost a really good person inside your organization because you wanted more for them than they want it for themselves. So that, you really got to be careful of that disconnect, as well as, do we place you, you know, do we take a talented person here and put them in this role that they don't feel comfortable or they don't have the talent for?
Absolutely. And I think that people need to grow organically within themselves, meaning as a farmer that plants seeds all over the world, I want people to be guided to have the tools that they need in order for them to self-motivate and grow from within themselves. And yeah, idealistically, egocentrically, I would love that huge title of CFO at, you know, IBM or whatever. However, I'm not organically grown for that yet. I would like the tools and the training and the place, you know, being in the right place at the right time and coaching so that I can prepare to have that role if that's my futuristic goal. I think sometimes that training and that organic growth gets missed, and that's where people cycle out. And hopefully with more people doing what you do, especially instructing and motivating people to become stronger, better, more valuable, more courteous leaders in our world, we'll have less cycling out like that.
Well, I also think, you know, sometimes I think what happens is that people believe, like, they don't want to let you down. You know, it's funny, you hear sometimes people talk about, you know, college. Well, I don't think college is for everybody. It's not because they're not smart enough to go to college. They're much more talented. As my brother Georgie, for example, is just an outstanding machinist. You know, what he does is world class, and, you know, I could never do what he does. I mean, his talent is amazing.
Right.
But that doesn't mean because he didn't go to college, he's less than his brother. Of course not. It's not even close. And I think if you think about it, when someone says to you, oh, you know, where'd you go to college? And you say, oh, I didn't go to college. I went to trade school. Oh, you went to trade school. They say it as if, like, you weren't smart enough to go to college.
Yeah.
No, I'm just a very good tradesperson. I'm great with my hands. I'm a great draftsman or whatever. I mean, we make people feel like, or I'm a supervisor and I enjoy being a supervisor, but I'm not sure I really want to be a manager. Oh, you don't want to be a manager. Well, it's okay. I mean, you recognize your talents. I think we have to allow people to, you know, to feel good about themselves, where they're at, and not make them feel like, oh, you're not living up to what I believe I would be doing, so therefore you can't be successful. I think it's terrible. I mean, I think people should go to trade schools if they want trades. They shouldn't feel like they're lesser of an individual because they don't have a 4-year degree. I think we do that to people all the time.
I will tell you that I was transitioning out of a very toxic divorce, and I didn't want to go back into account management in any technology firm because the big 2008 boom really crushed me. My mind wasn't there. I didn't want to play the game. Just needed some time off. So I started bartending again. And, you know, it's interesting being out of the loop for so many years to go back in the loop. So I'm bartending and I'm talking about being a single mom to a friend of mine who's sitting at the bar, and one of the patrons goes, well, that's your own damn fault. And I kind of looked at him in shock, and I'm like, why would you say that? And he goes, well, you could go to college and get a degree and do something with your life instead of being a bartender. And I just kind of smiled at him, and I said, well, I'm kind of happy where I'm at. I have a 4-year degree, and I've published 8 books, and I host an international radio show. And this job provides me the ability to have that flexibility to not only be on call for my daughter, but host my radio show and write my books and traveling around the country and speaking. And he just dropped his jaw. He's like, really? You do all of that? I couldn't imagine. And I said, but where would you have assumed that I wouldn't or couldn't or was unable to do so? And, you know, I didn't see him ever again, which was fine with me. But you know, planting that seed of, you know, you're making an assumption. You don't know who I am. I'm just a person serving you hard cider. Why would you make that assumption? And I think it's really interesting and entertaining to unravel those conversations in a polite and respectful way. I don't think people should, you know, be caustic about it. But there's a lot of assumptions and seeds that were planted as children where you have this expectation to have the white picket fence and the perfect marriage and the Mercedes Benz and the, you know, 9-digit salary. It's not real and it's not for everybody.
No, that's very true. And you know, at the end of the day, isn't it, to me, it's always about, are you and were you a good person? What's your legacy?
Right.
Are people better because of the time? Did you leave things a little better than you found them? Are people better because of their time with you? You know, my dad, rest his soul, he used to say the third thing he told me, we're sitting there one day and he looks at me and goes, you know, it's what you do when no one's watching that counts. And
amen.
I looked at him, I go, Dad, you know, I go, Dad, you just, like, you killed it. No one's watching. That's the best part. And he looked at me and goes, no, there's always two people watching. There's always the man upstairs. But then there's the person looking in the mirror. So just remember that. And so from that day forward, you always think about that. Okay, look, I may not have accomplished all the things I set out to accomplish. I may not have been perfect. I probably have my moments where, you know, I probably could have handled things in a different fashion. But I could always put my head on the pillow at night knowing that I did the best job I could. I gave 100% effort. You know, and I tried. You know, everything I did stemmed from an honest heart. And that's what I tell people all the time. You know, what you do should stem from an honest heart. You're going to make mistakes. You know, you're not always going to be you're not perfect, and it may not go the way you want it to go. But did you start out with an honest heart? Did you start out with the intention of doing it the right way? And then if it didn't go the way you wanted, did you learn from it? If you hurt or put somebody out, did you apologize for it? Hey, I'm sorry. This is what I thought was going to happen, but this is what happened. You know, these are the things. I just think that we sometimes believe that we're the infallible ones and everybody else is the problem. No, you know what? My grandma said, everybody's got their box of rocks, right? Everybody's got it. We're not perfect people.
So Rocco, I hate doing this to you because I've really enjoyed my time with you. I'm so appreciative, but we've got a minute and a half left of the show. We're getting ready to close out. Who are you? Where do we find you in 45 seconds?
Rocky Romanella, you can find me on my website at www.60managementservices.com. Email is rockyromanella@gmail.com. And I would love for you to get the book. We are donating $1 for every book sold this year to the Jimmy Valvano Fund to find the cure. So I feel as though I'm honored and blessed that people will be are buying the book, but it's also a good opportunity for us to give back to the V Foundation to find the cure.
All right, high five. Big hugs to you and your family. And, you know, try to take a day off or something. I don't know. Kick your feet up.
Thank you.
You know, you are retired. All right,
yeah,
Rocky,
that's true.
Thank you so much for being on the show. Next week, we've got Lola Scarborough. We're going to talk about life, breast cancer, and saving our tits, as her book's titled. I love you. You're beautiful. Do something inspiring for somebody, even if that somebody is yourself. Take time out. 5 minutes slower in driving, 5 minutes longer in bed, 5 minutes longer in the shower. Self-care is self-love, and that radiates beauty, and you can plant seeds all over the world in positive and wonderful ways. Until next week, you're listening to Rusty here on Living and Thriving with Rusty. Bye, Rocco. Bye, everybody.
Yeah, have a good night.
You're listening to Knitting and Fighting with Rusty.